Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции! Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы! Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества! Ура!
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried, and I'm still in China, still working hard, still not really getting a lot of time to record, unfortunately. But I'm still putting out Back in the USSR. I'm still working on it. I still am passionate about it, and it's at a time like this, it's just critical to lend my voice to all I can in the struggle against genocide. I've been talking about that for months now. It's been over a year of genocide in Palestine. The genocide has now expanded into Lebanon. The war indeed is escalating. The Zionist entity known as Israel is now attacking Iran. Iran has repulsed the most recent Israeli airstrike against Iran with its missile defenses, which is good news, and continues to stand by the resistance axis in Lebanon and in Gaza and in Yemen as they stand up against this genocide, which is just getting worse and worse and worse. Attacks on civilians, attacks on medical infrastructure, just massacre after massacre, like we're just bearing witness to. And it's terrifying. It's terrifying. But nonetheless, we stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people and all others who are resisting. So the Canadian lawyer, Dimitri Lascaris, who's an amazing guy. He has a really good YouTube channel. Former candidate for the leadership of the Green Party, actually, and eco-socialist. He was recently in Lebanon, and he was talking with Leif Maruf of Free Palestine TV, who he's done a lot of interviews with. And he was there a number of times in October in Lebanon, which Israel has invaded and heavily bombed. And he walked around Beirut, and he saw how the Lebanese people were resisting the latest round of Zionist aggression against their country and their people. And also some of the was on site for some of the where some of the atrocities took place, for example, against hospitals and medical personnel. And the reports which he sent back are pretty vivid and very revealing. And I would like to broadcast them on back in the USSR tonight. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Dimitri's reports from Beirut, Lebanon. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
So, Brother Leith, it's great to be back again, my man.
Thank you for coming again once more.
Last time we saw each other, I believe, was in the summertime. I couldn't see you on my most recent visit because you were under the weather, but you've recovered nicely. You're back in the saddle.
Alhamdulillah.
So today we are in a part of Beirut known as Hamra, and we are going to explore. You're going to take us for a tour of the humanitarian situation, shall we say, here in Beirut as a result of the Zionist aggressions.
Yeah, this building behind us was hit obviously during the last invasion in 1982. And the whole area of Hamra. See, we have people already coming, as we heard her, to the Capuchin school right there. This is some of the internally displaced are staying there. We'll come back to it later to talk to the people
Right.
And
can
see
we
how they're being treated and how people are dealing with the situation.
So before we get into the humanitarian situation, could you just tell us a little bit more about Hamra generally, the history of this place?
Yes, so Hamra is the cafe restaurant area of downtown Beirut. There's a coffee shop up here called Barzakh that is serving some of the displaced. We'll come back to it also.
Okay.
But here is Hamra Street. It's very famous, known across the region for cafes and restaurants. You know, usually, specifically in the last 6, 7 years, there's been an economic crash here in Lebanon. And the Hamra was hit really hard economically. It's practically empty. The stores were closing up. And now that there's all these displaced from across Lebanon and from the southern suburb of Beirut, a lot of people came to the Hamra area, you know, hoping that it's safer. And therefore, we could see right now how packed the streets are. You could see how all these cars are double parked. They're not supposed to be parked on both sides of the road. There's so much traffic. Every building practically in the core area here, whether it's abandoned or unfinished construction, people have taken refuge in these buildings.
And this area, is it diverse religiously, culturally, or is it you know, Sunni, is it Shia? What's the demographic makeup
So
of
this
this area?
is one of the most diverse neighborhoods in all of Beirut, because it's the financial kind of cultural area. You have Shia, Sunnis, Christian Orthodox, Maronite, Druze, and everybody has kind of a part of the neighborhood that the parties, different parties that have control of different streets. You'll see their flags.
And one of those parties, I believe, is the SSNP, the Syria Social Nationalist Party?
Yes, the Syrian Social National Party. And it is a party that calls for the unification of the greater Syria region. We're actually right now walking in an area that's very, very important for the SSNP and for the Lebanese resistance in general. Here's actually something that's commemorating what I was going to tell you about. If you can show us, Hadi, if you can show us this banner here, up here. So it says Syrian National Social Party, and under it, the resistance, National Resistance Front, Patriotic Resistance Front, and it says this is the square of Khaled Alwan. He is the hero of the Wimpy operation on the 24th of September 1982.
That was during the Israeli occupation
yes.
of Beirut.
Yes, so the Israelis occupied Beirut. The Palestinian resistance was expelled from Lebanon under supposed promise by the Americans that they will protect the Palestinian refugees when they leave, and the slaughter happened. At that point was the lowest point in resistance in Lebanon as a whole, and everybody thought that the resistance is dead since the Palestinians were expelled and so forth. So out of the blue, Khaled Alwan was walking here. There was a coffee shop called Wimpy Coffee Shop.
Where was that coffee shop?
Right here. And now there's a restaurant named after it here. We'll go to it in a second.
Okay. Yeah.
But there was two Israeli officers that
from the occupation
from
forces.
The occupation yeah. That ordered coffee at this coffee shop and were saying that they will pay with the Israeli shekel, that they were refusing to pay with the Lebanese lira and or the dollar. They were going to pay with a Israeli shekel. And Khaled Alwan was standing there. He couldn't, accept this humiliation happening to the coffee shop workers that were being...
It's double humiliation.
Double humiliation, with this occupation officers that are trying to force you to take their Israeli money. So he just pulled a gun and pop, 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 took them all out. They were...
And he said that famous quote, like, keep the
change. Keep the change.
Keep the change. That's exactly what he said. Keep the change in bullets. And that, number one, triggered the fear inside the Israeli occupation forces, and they began the withdrawal. And it also... inflamed the imagination of the Lebanese people in Beirut who were demoralized after the Sabra and Shatila massacre and after the expulsion of the Palestinian resistance here. So Khaled Alwan was a spark for reinvigoration of the resistance. So SSNP and Khaled Alwan forever.
Now you said that the SSNP calls for the reunification of the greater Syrian nation. What would that encompass, the greater Syrian nation?
Yeah, like you see that for a while here it said Wimpy, and they took it off, but now it's an Iraqi restaurant. In the minute Lebanon is fully liberated, we should turn these places into historical visiting places. We have to reopen the Wimpy. So right. you're asking about the
greater Syrian
SSNP.
Nation. Yes.
Geographically, the Levant, as it's called in English, or the Fertile Crescent, is one region. Geographically, it's also one subculture within the Arabic peoples. So we're talking about Iraq and Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, Jordan, the north parts of Arabia. This is all one geographic region, and historically has, the people are intermarried, it's the same tribes, it's the same families, and Sykes Picot, the British-French treaty, was designed specifically to cut off the people from each other Because if this Fertile Crescent area, this Greater Syria area, is unified, it will have the same weight as Iran or Turkey. It will be like 90 plus million people with all the resources that they need, with the geographic depth to actually be sovereign. Yes. Even without going all the way to unifying all the Arabic people, just unifying Greater Syria makes a counter to the colonials. And this is why SSNP was one of the first targets of the colonial authorities, the French and the British, when they occupied in World War I, was to target the SSNP. It is multi-faith, it is not sectarian, it is geography-based, so this was a threat to the French and the English, and they assassinated the founder, and then they started assassinating many of the other leaders of the SSNP, and this is why it's still very strong in Lebanon, Syria, Palestine, and Jordan, specifically the SSNP. So I
understand there's another group, before we move on from the SSNP, of a very different political orientation. I believe it's the Falangists, other far rightists, who believe that Lebanon should be smaller than its internationally recognized boundaries and effectively exclude the south and the Bekaa in the east. Is that correct? And who are these people?
Yes.
I've never heard anything like that before, that there's a political movement in the country that says we should give up territory.
Yes.
That's amazing. I mean, so what's this all about?
Yes, obviously, you know, anytime there's an occupied people, there's collaborationists. And there is those who serve the colonialists and adopt whatever identity the colonial master tells them to. You know, given that the West as a whole has based their fake identity on looting the heritage of the Arabic peoples and their ancestors, meaning Christianity and Judaism, we can see how the West tried to take part of our indigenous peoples, the Christian part, and you know, entice them to want to be part of this fake white identity that was created by the West. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, as always during occupations and colonization, there is people that collaborate. And here in Lebanon, it was the Christian supremacist parties that came out, the Falange and the Kata'ib, and those collaborated with the occupation, both French and eventually Israeli and American, and targeted first and foremost their own brethren in the Christian community. So they targeted, you know, churches, priests, and groups that viewed Christianity as indigenous to here, saw themselves as part of a wider culture, and so they were the first victims. The first victims, for instance, the Falange had a huge war specifically against the SSNP because of that Hadi. Look at this, look at this. So this building is in the middle of Hamra, has been for a while abandoned because there's no more business for 6 years almost. And now
it was a commercial structure.
It's a commercial structure. And people went in.
Not apartments.
Yeah. And so the internally displaced took it over because it should be taken over. If the
absolutely.
Owners are not using it, it is
100%,
for the
especially
people.
In a time of war.
Yes.
And I don't know if you can see this, Hadi, but people have their clothes out here on the...
I'm trying.
Right. This is... Wow.
Yeah. So we'll see even a new building down the street. Let's go to it. Just on the next corner.
So we're now walking away from the commercial building, which has been commandeered by people in need, quite rightly. And we had an interesting interaction there, Brother Laith, with some people, I understand, some men who are associated with the very party we've been talking about, the SSNP. And I just want to say, before I ask you to explain what happened to our audience, as somebody who doesn't live in Lebanon, I have noticed here throughout this entire conflict, it's just completely understandable, but it's disorienting. is there's a lot of sensitivity around people recording things.
Yeah.
And you can't just take out your cell phone, especially in a city like Beirut, and start filming stuff. People don't know who you are and expect that you aren't going to draw attention. You're going to draw attention and it's not going to be good. So why don't you tell us what happened here?
Yeah, well, obviously, in the last few days, there was multiple Israeli agents that were caught filming. You see, it says here, do not transmit names. Do not speak about places. Do not use your camera. The enemy is watching.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
So clearly, you know, the Israelis are...
The public awareness campaign.
Yes. So the Israelis are kind of mass collecting all information that's coming out of all electronic devices in Lebanon and using it to target things, number one. Number two, there is already, as I was saying, two Israeli agents pretending to be journalists that were caught in the streets of Beirut. And
when was that?
Yesterday and the day before.
Wow.
And okay. and they were handed over to the military, and because the military is captured by the Americans, they gave up those agents to the Americans, and they got deported with nothing happening to them. I'm gonna just answer this call. It's from the SSNP people because that we needed to speak to and update them on what we're doing, so
okay.
Nothing bad happens.
Sure. So we're good?
Yes, we're good. Okay. We updated them. They're all good with what we're doing. Obviously, people are sensitive about filming the buildings where people are taking refuge. Because as we saw in Gaza, the Israelis are purposefully targeting where refugees are gathering. You know, so
yes.
For instance, those schools, like you know, the school that we visited today, definitely could be a target because of the depraved Zionists.
Yes, the Zionists regard they put like a bullseye on anything that's a civilian shelter, or whatever. It's like a higher risk of being destroyed by the Zionists if it's designated and known to be a civilian.
Look, this building is not even finished construction.
Wow.
And it's already now been taken over by refugees. So this is supposed to be like luxury condos. So clearly now Hamra has become a heart of where the displaced are. And we will be visiting the schools and the food distribution centers right now. Let's go to that the school and one of the kitchens that are serving people.
Great. And just before we sign off, I wanted to comment one more as a somebody who was raised. Yes, someone who was raised in the Greek Orthodox religion. I'm not.
Let's sit down here for a minute.
I'm not a practitioner, but when I was younger, I was quite a devout man, a young man, and I actually read the New Testament 7 times when I was a teenager. I have to say that any self-professed Christian, whether they be Phalangists, whether they be North American Evangelicals, whether they be Greek Orthodox, whether they be Maronites, who support an entity like the Zionist entity or the governments in the West who back it are an affront to the most core values of Christianity. I don't know how any sane human being can devote him or herself to understanding the New Testament and come away thinking that you can reconcile the values expressed in that text with support for the Zionist entity. It's just utterly remarkable to me.
Yeah, I mean, look, anyone who claims to be Jewish and supports Zionism is in complete contradiction of the teachings of our prophet Moses.
Yes, correct.
The liberator of slaves.
Right.
The one that fought against the Pharaoh, the oppressive Pharaoh. The one that said, don't kill, don't steal, don't covet your neighbor's things. And what do the Zionists do? They kill, they steal, they covet their neighbor's land. And they enslave people. So
yes.
Clearly the teachings of the monotheistic prophets our teachings of love and unity. We are our prophets, Jesus, Moses, Muhammad, say we come from one mother and father, Adam and Eve. We're all one. And our God, our creator, will be judging us on how we treat each other, not even how we treat him or them, you know. So it's Zionism, Christian supremacy, Muslim supremacy, Jewish supremacy are all in contradiction to the oneness that our prophets have preached and have brought as a gift to humanity. So yes, the Falange are anti-Christian. The Zionists are anti-Jewish.
The evangelicals.
The Wahhabis are anti-Muslim.
Yes.
You see, this is not, they're not only Muslim supremacists or Christian supremacists or Jewish supremacists. They are anti the teachings of their own prophet.
Well said. And on that note, let's go see how the Lebanese people are helping their brothers and sisters who have been displaced.
Let's do that.
Yeah, yeah. It's low key. And the main man, Mr. Adouni. Tell him how you feel.
Yo, low key. You know we take life for granted too much. Them crumbs that are left from our food and we throw away. People in Iraq or Palestine could live with it. Then 1p, 2p, 5p you throw it on the floor. Because we can't buy nothing with it, don't mean we can't save it and give it to charity.
Too many suffering, too many tears. To see how you die, I'm knowing for years. When we look around, nobody care. And the people, them are living in fear. The system needs to change right now. Too much youth are good, I'm in a grave right now. You know, see the big lights are here right now. After get up, people are not safe right now. Whoa, the system needs to change right now. Too much youth are good, I'm in a grave right now.
Is my natural resource, now I want it back. Till I sever every single chain, I will not relax. Just constant attack, till my world looks like Montserrat. Contact my comrades for combat, what's conscious rap? When you say the truth, they attack like a saber tooth. Thinking clear, they make you disappear. Like you hate the fruit, don't need more Bowens. We don't need more Rebels, Weed or Lee or Cohens. They tell us about terrorism and tell us about terrorists. Look up the definition and tell us what terror is. Only know the definition if the television sell us it. Public enemy number one, they treat me like Professor Griff. This album has been in the making a quarter century. Born to bless the beat and rap over recorded melody. I knew the truth since I was a small little boy. I am a product of the system I was born to destroy.
They can't believe I saw them cheat people. And they have to protect and them are lead people. I'm in a sinner system for the street people. Can't believe them and the lead people. The system is the change right now. Too much youth are good, I'm in a grave right now.
Support the troops, but won't mention Joe Clinton. It's funny cause the rappers are posing as the gangsters, while the government taking money as bonuses for bankers. In life you learn to close your eyes and hold your tongue, but together we will overcome. There's never been a chosen one. Still trying to understand the land I stand on. I'd probably die from cancer, a sanger like Franz Fanon. Never give up, I will never just quit. I will never give in, I will never submit. The reason that I came is bleeding from the veins of the people. Cause we're equal, only freedom is the aim. This album has been in the making a quarter century. Born to bless the beat and rap over recorded melody. I knew the truth since I was a small little boy. I am a product of the system I was born to destroy.
They can't believe I saw them cheat people. And they have to protect and them are lead people. I'm innocent of system for the street people. Can't believe them are the lead people. The system is the change right now. Too much youth are good, I'm in a grave right now. Innocent of the bigger it's a tears right now. After get up people are not. Right now, whoa, whoa, it's instant if we change right now.
supplying your orders. You're fighting fire with fire, I'm fighting fire with water. When they kill me, I know I'll die with a focused mind. Plus there'll be millions of me ready to multiply. Don't just mention, acknowledge me, remember to honor me. My pen and its honesty, defended equality, declared a republic and ended your monarchy. Your corporate dictatorship pretends it's democracy. I hold your bloodline accountable for every crime. Adam Smith to Rothschild, it's all been a clever lie. Two choices now, revolution or genocide. But thanks to Rupert Murdoch, neither one will be televised. This album has been in the making a quarter century. Born to bless the beat and rap over recorded melody. I knew the truth since I was a small little boy. I am a product of the system I was born to destroy.
Me can't believe I saw them cheat people. And they have to protect and them I beat people. I'm innocent of systems in the street people. Can't believe them and delete people. The system is with me right now. Too much youth I put on me that grave right now. Innocent in the grave and the years right now. After I get up people I'm a slave right now.
Iraq,
Libya,
Yemen,
Syria,
Bahrain,
Algeria,
Somalia,
Tunisia,
Palestine,
Nigeria,
all the way to Bolivia, all of humanity, we all are familiar. We have more that makes us similar with each other. Big up them countries that are named
Venezuela to Mesopotamia.
We love you. Big up Akhoya Loki.
Big up Akhoya Adnan.
Khalas.
Khalas.
Good afternoon, this is Dimitri Lascaris coming to you from Beirut, Lebanon on October 12, 2024. I'm currently situated in the central part of the city of Beirut in a district known as Bashura. And the reason why we've come here today is that a week ago, a medical facility in this neighborhood was struck by the Israeli military. That medical facility is right across the street in this building. It was on the second floor. As you can see, that has been wrecked by the strike. In addition, the levels above were occupied by civilians. These are private residences. A number of them have been damaged. And in fact, it does appear as though the entire building, at least at the level of the second floor, has suffered structural damage that could very well affect the overall stability of the structure. This is a densely populated residential neighborhood. The Israelis gave no justification, not even a semblance of a justification for striking this medical facility. The strike killed seven workers of the facility, including two medics. As you can see behind me, this is an ambulance that belonged to the facility. This is a parking space for the ambulance. It was clearly marked, publicly known to be a healthcare facility. And at the very same time that Israel struck this structure, it also struck medical facilities in the south of Lebanon, killing healthcare workers there as well. This is part of a broader pattern, the systematic degradation of Lebanon's healthcare system that's been going on since the genocide began in Gaza last year. I've reported previously, as have others from the south of Lebanon, on the killing of medics in the months leading up to the assassination of Hassan Nasrallah, the attacks on medical facilities. In fact, I and my colleagues were at a hospital in Bin Jebel a few months ago, hours after it was struck by an Israeli drone, killing three people, civilians who were exiting the hospital's emergency ward. Just 2 days ago, the UN Commission of Inquiry accused Israel of committing crimes against humanity, in particular the crime of extermination, by destroying the healthcare system of Gaza, a process which continues to this very day. And if Israel continues to enjoy complete impunity for the destruction of the healthcare system of Gaza, there is a real risk that Lebanon will suffer the same fate, to the profound detriment and suffering of the Lebanese people. That's why it's all the more imperative that Israel be held accountable for its war crimes and crimes against humanity. Before this process of destroying healthcare systems in the region expands outward to other areas of West Asia. It's also notable that the explosion caused shrapnel to emanate outward, and here's one of the numerous pockmarks resulting from the shrapnel. I don't believe that any pedestrians in the area were killed or injured by the shrapnel, although 20 people who lived above this second floor were injured by the strike. But it just goes to show how deadly these types of strikes are, especially when they occur within a densely populated residential area. And lastly, I want to note that just down here, about 500 meters beyond the trees, you can't see it because of the greenage, is the residence of the Lebanese Prime Minister, and a little bit beyond that is the Lebanese Parliament. And clearly the proximity of these state institutions did not in any way, shape, or form deter Israel from attacking this civilian infrastructure. Why all of this happened? Well, let me speculate for a moment. On the day prior to this deadly attack, Israel suffered one of its worst days militarily, where fighters of the Islamic Resistance killed 8 Israeli soldiers who tried to infiltrate into the territory of Lebanon. Now, whether or not this was retaliation for that, who knows? But it is certainly noteworthy that Israel hasn't even attempted to justify its attack on this medical facility. Good evening, Ali. Thank you for joining me today.
Nice to meet you.
And could you tell me your full name and what you do for a living?
I'm Ali Azbek. I'm a civil engineer working at Vardani zone near Saida. I live in Beirut in Hadas area. I left my home because the Zionist enemy attacking my area.
Where's your home? What part of Lebanon is your home?
Laylaki al-Dahya Janawiya.
In Dahya.
Dahya, sorry.
Right. And so we're standing in front of a destroyed building. What is this place, and how was it destroyed?
This place is a residential building containing a group of people that left their homes and go to this area as a safe area. Mm-hmm. But the Zionist enemy make a massacre in this area.
And when did that happen? When?
Yesterday.
And I understand you were here, you were close by when it happened. Where were you when this building was destroyed?
Distance about 50 meters only.
And what were you doing?
We are in our new home in Basta. Mm-hmm. Near this area.
This is called Basta, this area?
Basta, yes. Okay. Yes.
Sorry, so go ahead. So, and what happened when you heard the explosion? What did you do?
I rushed to this area and I see this crime in this area. Mm-hmm. About 18 martyrs and about 100 wounded. In this area.
And did you when you came here after the explosion, did you see some of the people who were killed and wounded?
Yes.
And you didn't see any military?
No military. There is a residential building. No military operation in this area at all. Mm-hmm. At all.
And I understand you also were very close to another attack that happened in
Saida. Yes, at Vardani, I rushed to the area of the bomb, and this cultural association that was attacked by the Zionist enemy. Mm-hmm. He targeted residential area, a residential building that contain about 20 civilians. Mm-hmm. 6 of these civilians dead. Mm-hmm. And about 27 wounded.
And there did you see some of the dead and wounded yourself as well? Did you see some of the victims?
Yes, I worked with the municipality. Mm-hmm. There, and by my hand, I... Mm-hmm. I
You helped.
I helped this wounded people, and with my hand, I see the martyrs there.
Yeah, you were trying to get them out with your hands.
Yes, I see.
And so now, are you going to stay in Beirut despite all of the destruction? Are you going to stay in this area?
Yes, yes, we are staying here till the end of this war.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with me, Ali.
There is suffering in the streets, our leaders say, let it be, let it be. We the people don't agree. For this suffering, there is no need. But they'll wait until there's a revolution, revolution everywhere. Burning of property, more homeless people lying in the streets.
So don't forget about your wealth. Won't you just get up and help? If the history repeats itself.
The people cry in vain. We beg the leaders to see reason, to show a little pity. For this suffering, there is no need. But they'll wait until there's a revolution.
They want revolution everywhere.
Burning of property.
More homeless people.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Femi Kuti with The Fight to Win, son of Fela Kuti, the great resistance leader in Nigeria. Stood up against a military dictatorship with his music. So we've been listening to Dimitri Lascaris, Canadian lawyer and activist, his reports from Beirut, Lebanon. his experience seeing the aftermath of an Israeli bombing of a clinic, of a medical facility. And also his meeting with Laith Maruf of Free Palestine TV. They walked around Beirut and just got into the history of the resistance there and like the deep roots that go back to the 80s and before, right? Like of resistance against the first Israeli invasion of Lebanon and which penetrated all the way to Beirut, took control of all of South Lebanon and occupied it for more over a decade. You know, very brutal occupation that Hezbollah basically came into being in order to fight that occupation, to drive it out. And they ultimately succeeded in the year 2000 in driving him out of South Lebanon and defeating Israel and its collaborators. And basically that struggle is going on, continues to go on to this day. It never really ended. And the people there know that. They know who the good guys are. They know who who to root for in this conflict. They know whose side the resistance is on. And they're not fooled, you know, by say the Western media or this constant narrative that we hear from the American State Department, which is just gaslights everybody every day, tries to pretend like they don't know what's really going on. You know, try to pretend that they're actually working for a ceasefire when actually they're enabling a genocide. You know, and of course, this is all we hear in the American presidential election as well. Just constant gaslighting. But we know that the resistance is on, the Palestinian resistance, the Lebanese resistance, the resistance around the Middle East. They're on the right side of history. They're the heroes. They're the ones making sacrifices. And they're the ones who are ultimately going to be victorious, you know, against this army of bullies and cowards and genocidal maniacs. You know, that is the Israeli army and its backers throughout the West, who are also like just pathetic people, if you want to call them even people. You know, just the kind of things they're pushing, you know, just genocide in broad daylight, acting like it's normal. And I was actually listening to Mohammad Mirandi, an Iranian professor who's he was recently on Danny Haifong's show on YouTube. And, you know, like he was just talking about just the moral decrepitude, the monstrosity that these Western leaders, what they embody. And he basically said like Iran and Hezbollah and like these other, and Ansar Allah and Yemen, they're not going to abandon the Palestinian people. They're not going to abandon them to genocide. They're not going to leave them to die or to fight alone. They're simply not going to do that. You know, and this is why, you know, Iran will hit back against, you know, after Israel's strike against Tehran and other targets in Iran this past week. And the struggle will go on basically until the genocide is put to an end. You know, and that can end in a number of ways. That can end with like Benjamin Netanyahu stepping down, being overthrown, what have you. And if that doesn't happen, you know, if this genocide keeps enabling, I mean, Israel is going to ultimately have to collapse entirely for there to even be any credible ceasefire end to this genocide. Because fundamentally, we're not up against reasonable people here. We're up against monsters. You know, the resistance is fighting monsters in the Middle East. We have to understand that. This is not a conflict between, you know, legitimate interests and, you know, like, say, people you can reason with. You know, like, these are the guys who, you know, these guys want to wipe out the Palestinian people. Like, the Israeli government wants to wipe out the Palestinian people. You know, genocidal violence, and they normalize it in the media every day, and in the media talking points and all this sort of thing, act like it's just normal. You know, this is normal self-defense. And just this is, the after effects of this are just going to be with us for a very long time. I mean, the legitimacy of so many institutions has just tanked. You know, we've seen the hollowness of international law. We've seen the hollowness of the UN. which is doing nothing. Maybe can do nothing to stop this genocide. You know, with the given that the U.S. and like the Western powers are all behind Israel. Like fundamentally, resistance is the only. Like they're being shown for what they are, which is they're the real heroes. They're the real people who are fighting. And resistance is the only way to stop this genocide. There's not going to be any magical solution from the International Criminal Court, for example, or the ICJ, or any of these institutions which are supposed to claim to protect people from this sort of thing around the world. It's not going to happen. It's going to be decided on the battlefield. Justin Podor on the Anti-Empire Project has said this repeatedly on his show, on his podcast. And it's true. You know, the resistance will be victorious on the battlefield and put an end to genocide through combat. Like, that's ultimately the only way that's going to happen. Like, the same way that the Nazi genocide was brought to an end. You know, same way the Holocaust was brought to an end. It was brought to an end on the battlefield in World War II. And sometimes in history, it's like that. In fact, a lot of times in history, it's like that. It doesn't end because of, like, some, you know, some legal norm or something like that, or some sort of tribunal. It ends because people rise up and they fight. They fight, they sacrifice, they die, and ultimately they emerge victorious against the monsters who are, you know, committing these crimes, these atrocities. And that's the way it's going to be in Palestine and in the wider Middle East, in West Asia. So with that, I think I'm going to wrap things up here tonight. You've been listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried, as always, and I will see you all next time. Till then, hang in there and solidarity.
When the generator's on, till the cops said move around.